How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 10 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Head to normantranscript.com to get all your Thunder coverage there. You can find my blog, Thunder Road, on the site. It's under the sports tab on the website. And today we have a very special guest, maybe the most special guest I could possibly have. It's my buddy, ESPN's Royce Young.
I'm the most special guest?
No, it's only 10 episodes, so don't worry. Okay. We'll probably pass it.
Long way to go. It can get far more special.
So how's the Twitter hate coming?
Twitter hate's been great. I enjoy a little Twitter hate. It's fine.
You're embracing the haters?
Here's the thing, is that over the past couple days, really the last week, Twitter mentions have been so on fire that I just ignore them because there's too many coming too fast. It's like, what's even the point of this, you know? So I just kind of ignored it.
Do you have too many followers now? Like, is it too many to read your mentions at this point?
It's probably getting there. With a big event like this, I mean, this sounds so pretentious and arrogant to talk about Twitter followers. but with a big event like this, like where big things are happening and everybody's got an opinion. I mean, like back in the day, you know, I was the guy like trying to respond to every single tweet that somebody sent me. You know, like I wanted to, like if somebody like sent me a tweet, because I knew how like I would feel. I would want, if I tweeted somebody, I'd want to tweet me back, you know, how nice that is. But, you know, I still try to kind of keep up with them because I've always, you know, like, I remember Brian Windhorst told me when I first got hired, he was like, don't read your Twitter mentions. He like, just don't do it. And I kind of told him, like, man, I kind of get it. There's a value for me out of it because I feel like I can kind of, you know, gauge the pulse of the fan base or what people are saying. Or even, you know, some people are really smart and they got good observations and they can kind of open your mind up to something. So, I still try to read them as much as I can.
Yeah, and let the hate fuel you. Let it happen. Today we're going to go over a bunch of stuff. Durant like just finished his press conference. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon around 4:15 Central Time. We're going to get to Royce's awesome KD piece that he wrote just a couple of days ago after that. You can find that on ESPN.com. Chances are you probably already read it. But so Durant just had the introductory press conference with the Warriors.
Live in front of the studio audience.
Yeah, was that a press conference? Or was that... It sounded like a lecture at the Y that I would go to.
It was like a State of the Union or something. With like people, you know, standing and clapping. I'm sure Ethan was just like... He probably took his shirt off and had it swinging over his head. I'm sure he was leading the charge.
Yeah, I just imagine like Tim Kawakami going streaking across the stage.
What did they do? Seriously though, did they like let some season ticket holders in? I assume that's what they probably did.
It had to be. I mean, it wasn't media. Like the Warriors have really, really good professional media. It wasn't.
Yeah, we're joking. I mean, obviously the media was not the people cheering there.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter mention that they let like VIP season ticket holders got in. So, I mean, that was obviously what it was. But it was so weird, right? Also, the fact that it wasn't really a press conference; it was like a roundtable hosted by Bob Fitzgerald. Who's the play-by-play guy for the Warriors, and then they kind of turned it into a press conference. It wasn't the first time I've seen a format like that, but it just kind of always catches you off guard because it's not quite a press conference, and it's not quite a roundtable, and the audience is so they're so excited about getting Kevin Durant, those season ticket holders, that they're all suck up laughs and suck up cheers, you know?
Right.
It's so inorganic. It's super awkward.
I love the upper hand advantage. Laugh that people can generate. It's like the same thing happens all the time in media scrums. It's like a player standing there, and it's like Steven Adams is a bad example because he's legit hilarious. Like, you know, but like Cameron Payne or somebody is like standing there and they like say something kind of halfway offhand that's supposed to be funny, and everybody's just, just laughs. Like, and it's not funny at all, but they have this upper hand, like this perceived advantage over us. So we're all kissing their butts for some reason. I don't get why we do it.
Well, reporters are weird too, because I think reporters are so, like, reporters specifically, not like the season ticket holders who are laughing, but like reporters specifically, we're so conscious about trying to avoid some guy who we're interviewing not putting his guard up around us. Right. That I think part of it is that we think if they say something that they think is funny and we don't laugh, then they're going to put up their guard. They're going to be like, hey, who are these guys who aren't laughing at my jokes, you know?
Oh, open it up. I said a funny.
Yeah, exactly. And like, but we always oversell the laugh.
I know.
It's always way too uproarious about something that's not funny. Right. I think for also like athletes are often so just giving so many cliches that I think sometimes it catches people from surprise, you know, by surprise when they're funny. Right. Like Steven Adams is always hilarious.
That's why Steven Adams is such a treasure. And because as a media member, like having a guy like Steven Adams, like he's it's like that Seinfeld episode where, you know, like George is telling Jerry that he can't be funny because of his date, you know, and it's like he's like. And Jerry's like, I can't, you know, I'm not trying to be funny right now. And George is like, you can't not be funny. That's Steven Adams. It's like, Steven Adams could be giving a serious answer, and it's like, it's still kind of funny.
I think Steven Adams is the best interview in the league.
He's up there. And I hope he stays that way. You know, the more he gets requested, and next season, obviously, now with no Kevin Durant, Steven Adams is, you know, honestly, he might become kind of the spokesman of the team with the way that Russ is. You know, so we might hear from Steven Adams as much as any other player. So hopefully he doesn't get jaded and feel like he doesn't want to do it anymore or like you said, Fred, kind of throw his guard up. Hopefully he stays the way he's been because it's been a treat.
I know. He's great to talk to. He's great to talk to. Evan Turner is amazing to talk to. I love talking to Evan Turner. One of my favorite interviews I've ever done is Evan Turner. Just talking to him in the corner of the locker room and him being hilarious. He's so funny. I mean, dude made t-shirts with himself as the NBA logo.
See, here's what makes like a guy like Adams, you know, so great too, though. And you brought this up too before, Fred. Like a guy like Nick Young, where it's just like kind of all jokes and stupidity, you know, like it's like, you know, you get some like kind of tweetable quotes out of a guy like that. But Steven Adams, you can ask serious basketball questions too as well. And he'll give you a thoughtful answer in that regard while also keeping the interview light and fun. And that's, I think that's what makes a guy like Adams great. I don't know how we're talking about Steven Adams.
How Steven Adams became the biggest story of the day, I don't know.
For Thunder Nation right now.
Hey, we're rising hope. Steven Adams is going to be a really good player. He's going to be a better player, and he's really fun. So Thunder fans can hold on to that. Let's talk about the press conference a little bit. Was there anything that you took away from Durant in that, other than a couple of quips that, you know, Steve Kerr had about him not starting yet and him joking about only going there to be with Ron Adams?
Yeah. Har, har. You know, we're all laughing. Har, har. I think that the two biggest takeaways for me, and it's not a surprise that Kevin said it this way, but how he tried to project this to be the hardest road rather than the easiest road, I found that, you know, reasonably interesting just because he understands the perception here. And, you know, his reasoning was, you know, he's changing teams, he's in a new, you know, he's out of his comfort zone, he's got to, you know, adjust to the city and the team culture and all that type of stuff. And so, you know, in his mind, he's saying, like, this is going to be a hard thing to do. But, you know, to me, that's not going to play well. You know, in some ways, I think you just kind of got to own it. And I'd say that stood out to me. His answer about Russell Westbrook kind of stood out to me just because, you know, he said Russ obviously wasn't happy with it, but we're friends. But then he kind of said, and I'm sure I'll talk to him again later. So, like, clearly once this decision has been made, he's really not talked much with Russell Westbrook. It seems that there's probably some animosity there at this point. And then the other thing, and this is to be expected, and I think there's a time and a place for other stuff. You know, there's a time crunch in that type of press conference. And I think they were doing one-offs right after it. So who knows what maybe got asked. But, you know, there was not a whole lot asked about, you know, the perception of joining a super team. And, you know, even the thing that I would have loved if somebody would have asked him about the thing he tweeted 6 years ago. You know, just like, you said this then, you know, now you join this team now. You know, what made you feel, like, differently about this right now? So nobody really asked him kind of about – and also the other thing, there's another thing nobody asked him about joining the team that beat you. You know, nobody asked him about that either.
Yeah, I would have liked to know in a similar vein. I think if I were there, and there wasn't any Thunder media there, right? Like, I wasn't there.
I don't think so. Yeah. I wish that I had gone, honestly, now that I think about it. But maybe it's for the best that I didn't.
Yeah, you and I are both in Oklahoma City. Slater and Eric Horn are in Oklahoma. Like, all the Oklahoman guys are in Oklahoma City. And I can't think of anybody else that would go. And I think Nick Gallo is in Orlando for Summer League. And I can't think of anybody else that would go. So I don't think any Thunder media is there. What I would have asked him is, he's kind of, he's kind of the golden boy of the league, it feels like. Right. I mean, Curry, you know, you could say also, but Kevin Durant for 9 years has been the golden boy of the league. He's been beloved by everyone, not just in Oklahoma City, but around the league. In the last 72 hours, he's almost become a villain. Right. And I wonder how he is going to embrace that. I don't think his play is going to be bad or anything like that, but I just wonder how someone's character, and he kind of tap danced around that. He said something, you know, like in our culture, it's right. A comic book culture, he called it, and everyone's either a hero or a villain. And he kind of tap danced around it, but I'd like to know how we feel about that. You know, people forget that for about 8 years, or whenever it was, 2003 to 2010, every single basketball fan adored LeBron James, except for maybe the Kobe stans who refused to admit that he was better than Kobe. But everybody adored LeBron James. And then after the decision, that was the switch. And I don't know if it's the same thing. They're two different people. It's different situations, but there are comparables there. And, you know, we've kind of seen somewhat of a turn in public perception on Durant with a lot of different people. And I wonder if that wears on him, or if he has, you know, any sort of thought on that.
Yeah. And because, you know, as I've said, you know, he's somebody that pays attention to what the media is saying. So I do wonder how he's going to react to that sort of thing as the season goes along. Because right now there's been reaction obviously to it, but you know, as the summer goes along and basketball kind of fades into the background, you know, there will be the Olympics and people will talk about some stuff there, but you know, this is not going to come back to the forefront until training camp opens. And then people really kind of are going to start focusing on that a lot more. And especially if you know, the Warriors come out of the gates kind of slowly, maybe they do struggle to adapt and adjust, or, you know, it will be interesting to see how he will react to some of that stuff. Because, you know, one of the things that I know about Kevin is that he certainly always craved respect and wanted to make sure that he had his name, you know, in every conversation alongside LeBron James. And, you know, he was always kind of concerned about his place in the league in terms of reputation. And I wonder how he's going to react to that if people don't like him and people, you know, perceive him to now not be even the best player on his own team.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, we've seen the reaction of how kind of the shooting fraud of what happens when like Miami started off 9-8 in 2010. And I know these are different teams and we're in a different climate, but at the same time, I mean, there are a lot of comparables, obviously, in those situations, and we've seen the shooting fraud, and yeah, I mean, coverage is going to be dictated by that. It's going to be interesting to see just how the perception. Now, I mean, look, that team's going to be unbelievable. It doesn't matter what happens. That team is, you know, it's going to be as good as everybody thinks that they're going to be. But the interesting storyline is not how good they're going to be, because everybody knows how good they're going to be. We don't need to follow that. It's almost, we don't need to break it down at that point. It's going to be the perception. It's going
to
be.
I'd say too, I think people need to understand this. I don't think that they're going to win 73 games next year. I don't think they're going to win more than 73 games, but I think that they're going to be better than they are this year. So like, I think, you know, people are probably going to jump all over that. You know, if they end up going 67-15, you know, and they're, you know, or even 63 wins or whatever it might be, people are going to say like, obviously Kevin Durant's messed this up. They can win 63 games and they're going to be better than that 73 win team. I'm pretty confident of that. You know, because if you go review this Warriors season and kind of go through it and look at a lot of the games that they won, so many games were won because Steph Curry was just undeniably amazing in some of those games. And now there's and also they were kind of killing themselves to win those type of games. So I think that as they kind of go through this season, I think that they may not place as much of a priority on it. Now, who knows? They may go 80-2. I don't know. But I don't think that there's going to be like, you know, there's not going to have to be the same kind of heroics, I think, for them to get their wins that there was. And, you know, their obvious goal is going to be to look forward to what happens in April, May, and June rather than, you know, they've won 73 games. Of course, they'd love to win 74, but I don't think that they're going to place a priority on it.
Yeah, and I don't know if the motivation is there to win 73 or 74 again, right? Because they're breaking their own record. I think it's one thing when you're going after the 96 Bulls and you grew up watching Michael Jordan and you've heard the legacy of Michael Jordan and you've heard the legacy of those six championship Bulls teams and you want to go after their record and you want to be known as the best team ever, you know? And that's a real motivation. And I didn't fault them for going to 73 wins. I understand why you would want to do that if you're a competitor. Like, it makes total sense to me. But when you're chasing your own record, it just seems like a different type of thing. I mean, you already have that record. Kevin Durant doesn't, but this Warriors core already has that record. And especially considering it didn't work out, there might be, in the playoffs, there might be more of an emphasis placed on just play it for the postseason no matter what and move on from there.
They might kind of take the Spurs approach or something.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me, especially with so much talent on that roster. And, like, look, they're with the rate they're going, they're signing David West and Zaza Pachulia for below market value deals. They could easily bring in a couple more veteran
minimum guys. Do you think Durant's going to be okay with that, though? Like, because he's going to be aware of the perception of, you won X number of games less than they did when they had Harrison Barnes as the starter. I mean, I think that they're – I wonder, his own ego might play a little bit of a role in that. Is he going to be willing to kind of pull back, I don't know.
I think that's a good point. I mean, Steve Kerr kind of mentioned that I can't remember if it was Kerr or Bob Myers who mentioned that in the press conference, said, you're not going to be playing 38 minutes a game anymore. So I thought that was almost some sort of allusion to the fact that the Warriors are going to be playing their guys 30 to 32 minutes a game. They're going to win 62 to 64 games and, take a one seed. Maybe if the Spurs win 67 again, take a two seed into the playoffs with a ridiculous amount of wins and, just be fully healthy and fully rested for the postseason. Not that they weren't resting guys, last year they were. I mean, their guys don't play a ton of minutes. They sit a bunch of fourth quarters. They have a really, really innovative, catapult system. Catapult is for the listeners who don't know, that's basically the medical technology that the Warriors and a bunch of other teams around the league use to measure how tired guys are in practice. And it tracks how fast you're going. It's almost like Sport View, but even more, just even more in depth, and, heart rates and blood pressure and all of those things, and can really tell you, all right, this is a time when you need to sit a guy. This is a time when you need to start monitoring a guy's minutes just because he's tired throughout the season. It's an incredible thing, and the Warriors use that to their advantage as well as any other team. So it's not like they didn't already have an emphasis on this, but now there's so much talent on the roster, I could just see them going totally extreme with it.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, if they win a championship, no one's going to say anything. Let's get to this piece, though, because okay. I'm not just stroking your ego, Royce. This piece was...
How do you stroke?
This piece was really good.
Edit that out, please, for the love of God.
Yeah, no, it's staying in. That's staying in. It's staying in, if only because I'm too lazy to edit it out. It is staying in.
Fair enough.
This piece was it was awesome. It was really good. We're both true hoop guys. We've known of each other's existence for a while because we both started writing for ESPN affiliated blogs before we were actually on the officially professionally on the Thunder beat. And I thought this was one of your best pieces, if not the best piece you ever wrote.
Thank you much. That's very nice.
One thing in it that really stood out for me, you can find it on ESPN.com. If you're a Thunder fan, I imagine you already read it. One thing that stood out to me, which we discussed a little bit before, was the people that the Thunder brought to their meeting with Durant and the Hamptons. You wrote in that piece that, other teams were bringing players. The Warriors brought their big three plus Iguodala. And, some were flashing it up like crazy. The Celtics had Tom Brady. The Thunder went the opposite direction. The Thunder brought support staff and people who were just, Royale Ivy and people who were around the Thunder. They're around Durant on a daily basis. I thought that was a really interesting way to play it.
Yeah, especially now with the hindsight of Durant's introductory press conference, kind of now we're in the shadow of that. And with him talking about how impressed he was with the Warriors walking in kind of as a family with, Steph and Draymond and Clay all kind of walking in together. And Durant seemed to have been struck by that. So I think that, yeah, certainly, the Thunder, they brought – who they decided to bring. And I think that really what the Thunder were trying to do was kind of stick to their core values and stick to who they are through the entire process. They didn't want to deviate from that. And that was to bring the people that Durant knew – intimately and worked with every day on a day-by-day basis. I mean, that's public relations, that's medical team, that's trainers, that's equipment managers, that's, Royal Ivy assistant coach, Presti, Clay Bennett, obviously was there. So, these are people that, Durant knew and knew well and, are more than just coworkers, they're friends of his. And so the Thunder went with that because I guess from the Thunder's perspective, you know, I think a lot of people are in the, as this kind of plays out, people are going to say, well, why wasn't Russell Westbrook more involved? Why wasn't Russell there? And I think that that's a fair question. I do think that that's a fair thing to wonder is, you know, why wasn't Russ more directly involved? Now, Russ and Kevin and Nick Collison went to a dinner, the you know, in the days before in Oklahoma City. They did different things. You know, Russ was in communication with KD throughout a lot of this, but he wasn't in, like, the meetings, you know. And I think that as people kind of process this, that's going to be something I think that is fair to wonder is how Russell Westbrook's role played into it. But, you know, that I don't know that it's hard to say if Russell Westbrook was sitting there alongside all those people, if anything would be different. Honestly, I don't think anything the Thunder could have done. I think people are, you know, going to be looking in hindsight. What could they have done? What could they have done? I really don't know if there's anything that they could have done differently outside of winning game six, you know, outside of that. I really don't know if there's anything that they could have done differently to have persuaded Durant not to go to the Warriors.
Could have made a hotel reservation in advance.
That would have, having some foresight there would have been solid.
Yeah. Yeah, could have just gone, made the hotel reservation, and you know, canceled 24 hours in advance if need be. I'm sure they have the 24 hour cancellation policy. It's just a Holiday Inn Express. Like, I'm sure you would have been fine on that front. Also, like, I know Amin joked about this on True Hoop, but like, Clay Bennett could have called a blade, gotten them in a helicopter, flew them 30 minutes to New York City, and gotten a hotel room. That could have happened.
He could have.
Looked it up. Blade is $500 a ride. That could have happened.
Wow, that's it.
I think you can only fit. I think you can only fit six people, so they would have had to call two. But that's $1,000. I don't know if you tip. I don't know if it's like Uber where there's no tip.
Wow, that's amazing.
Blade, by the way, is helicopter Uber.
I think I'm just gonna put that app on my phone just to have it on there, so people are gonna, like, you know. If somebody happens to see me on my phone and they, like, look over and they see that I have the Blade app, they're going to just think I'm a total G. They're going to be like, oh, my gosh, you got Blade? Like, yeah, you know, sometimes I got to bounce around a little bit.
Yeah, I got Blade. That's how I get to Kevin Durant press conferences in San Francisco, right?
Yeah. What do you expect from me?
Yeah. But it's only $500. Looked it up. It's the beauty of Google. It's only $500 from the Hamptons to New York City. Easy. Totally could have done that. Stayed in New York City more comfortably. Clay Bennett wouldn't have had to share a bed.
That would have honestly run contrary into who these guys are. I mean, especially Clay Bennett. Clay Bennett is an Oklahoman through and through, salt of the earth. And I know that some people are going to say, well, oh, I mean, you're a professional sports owner. You know, you got to lavish and be luxurious and, you know, over the top. Like, that's just not Clay Bennett. I mean, it's just really not.
Do you think that'll – I think he should have taken the Blade. I think when in doubt, you take the Blade. If you can get a Blade, you do the Blade. Speaking as someone who has never taken Blade, I think you got to take the Blade. Why not? Just helicopter in there. It would be great. Yeah. I'm curious to know also. I don't want to step on the toes of the guys at True Hoop. And you guys went over pretty much everything from the piece from an actual content perspective. I'm curious to know what your process is like when you're going about writing a piece like this, in just terms of gathering information in such a short time. I mean, a lot of people, you know, Lee Jenkins writes a piece, and, you know, Lee Jenkins, for my money, is as good of a feature writer as there is in the business, or Jonathan Abrams. Yeah. Jonathan Abrams, like, those guys are as, you know, Chris Ballard, those guys are as good as you're going to find, and those guys spend a few weeks writing, you know, a piece like this. Every reporter is different. I'm sure we do some things the same when we're writing big feature pieces. I'm sure we do things totally differently. So Durant signs. You have basically like 24 or 36 hours, right, to get this thing together. I realize that not all the information is gathered in the last 24 hours. Like, some of it was gathered 8 years ago. Right. But where's your starting point?
Well, that is my advantage here, is that I've been writing this thing effectively for the last 8 years. So, you know, but I think that I had kind of mapped out an idea in my head of, if Kevin Durant signs with somebody else, I think this is kind of the direction I wanted to go. Because I had, you know, I knew I had the text in mind of him basically saying he wanted to come back. So it's like, and plus I had heard from everybody within his inner circle. And there's some more evidence that I found out throughout the week, last week, that strongly suggested that Kevin Durant was going to return to Oklahoma City. So I wanted to kind of, my kind of hypothesis here, was just like, what changed? Like, I wanted to just try to kind of answer that question and, you know, kind of go through the process of, like, everybody's trying to figure out, like, why would Kevin Durant leave the Thunder? Like, that was, everybody was, like, almost in universal agreement of, like, of course he's going back. He's going back for at least a year. You know, if he really is thinking about it, he should sign long term. Of course he's going back to the Thunder. Look at what they just did in the postseason. And so, like, I feel like I have the kind of the unique perspective of having known Kevin for 8 years and gotten to know him pretty well, both on and off the court. And so I felt like it was kind of my duty and responsibility to apply some of that kind of knowledge that I had. And so, like, in terms of my process, like, really, Fred, like, the thing, it really wrote itself. It really did. And it was just about trying to kind of piece it together in a way. It's funny how I ended up having to write it. I had to write it in my truck, sitting in my driver's seat. That's where I wrote, like, 90% of it, in between live shots for SportsCenter. So it's like I'd, like, write for, like, 35 minutes, you know, on it, like, sitting there in my hot steaming truck with the air conditioner on, and then I'd, like, jump out, and then I'd come back to it. So, and then I kind of finished it up that night when I got home. I stayed up real late and kind of tried to finish it as much as I could. But
you're becoming a live shot pro. You are. You got those down. Yeah, you got. When you had to do that live shot in front of all of us in the press room because there was nowhere else to do it, and you were like a solid 6 inches from me. Do you know how close I came just being like, screw this, I'm gonna mess with Royce and I'm on SportsCenter. I should have done it. I would have completely killed any sort of professional ideal that I had of myself, but it might have been worth it.
Yeah, but it would have made for good TV.
Yeah, ESPN reporter gets like his nipples tickled live on TV would be great.
I would say this too, though, to answer your question more about what the process is. Like, honestly, I kind of regret my process a little bit because I wish that I had like kind of sat down and written down every nugget and anecdote that I could possibly think of. Like, just on a piece of paper, just wrote them all down, had them, and like been doing this for the last week or so. Like, every interesting thing that I could think of that might make sense to explain something. Because here's what happens. I've spent the last like two days regretting not, like, oh, that should have been in there. Like, oh, I should have put that in there. And like, you know, and I wish, I think it had enough in there already. But it's just like, you know, I'm sure you deal with this too, Fred. You hit publish and it's out there, and then you sit there and you go, it could have been better. It could have been a little better.
Every single article that I write.
It's like, I could have made that birdie putter. I could have shaved a few more off. Like, I played really good. It was a nice day, but it always could have been a little bit better. And so I kind of have been living with that.
Writing is as much about dealing with regret as it is anything else. Exactly. And like actually coming back from that regret and still doing it. Like, people talk about how athletes have to have a short memory. I feel like writers are similar in that because pretty much every single article that I write, unless it's just kind of, you know, a throwaway thing where, you know, I did, you know, one quick interview with a guy and I'm piecing something together and it wasn't a particularly good interview and I'm piecing it together and then I'm done. I mean, if I'm writing something that's in-depth and a real feature, there are always things that, like, even things that I don't forget. You know, there's something that I have in my notes because your first version is always a gazillion times longer than your final one. Mm-hmm. And because at least the way that I write, if I'm doing something like that, I just start writing randomly and I just don't try to
edit.
That's kind of what I do. Yeah, don't worry about typos. Yeah, I don't worry about typos. I don't worry about editing. I don't worry about phrasing. I don't worry about anything along those lines. And I just kind of type and I let it all come out. And then I think of another thing that's totally unrelated and I press enter 10 times and then I start writing that thing. And then I find ways. Yeah, I find ways to piece it together, you know? And you end up cutting things out. And there are things that, like, even that I cut out that I'm like, that would have been way better. Now, sometimes you don't cut things because of content. You cut things because you just aren't really sure how it fits in the narrative that you're building.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I kind of did that with a few things. You know, I kind of had some stuff in there about, like, you know, the realities that the Thunder faced in terms of having to break up their team. And it's just like, I think it was useful information and some of it was pretty good, but I think it just didn't really necessarily fit. So, like, one of the things I had a massive advantage on is shouts out to Ramona Shelburne because she called me a couple times. She kind of talked me through it. I sent her an early draft and, like, Ramona is like, you know, she's a fantastic feature writer, but she's just an unbelievable storyteller. Like, she understands, like, narrative so well. And honestly, like, when she was telling me stuff on the phone, I'm like, I wanted to be like, can you just rewrite it, like, the way you're saying it? Because it'd be so much better if you did it this way. Yeah.
She is great. She is fantastic at her job. Okay, I want to know, you shared a story on Twitter, the Kevin Durant texting's reporter to ask him about Skip Bayless so that he could tee off on him at a press conference. That's something you said you left out of the piece. You
mentioned it had been in there a little bit, but
yeah, you mentioned something else on True Hoop yesterday, just about him with his relationship with Russ that you said you left out of the piece. I want to know something else that you left out that maybe not that you wish you had put in, maybe it didn't fit, but something that's a good story that we don't know about Kevin Durant that you've learned the last 8 years.
One little, like, just small anecdote that I wish I'd put in there, just I found out about, that was that, you know, they made the trade for Victor Oladipo, and, you know, Kevin was a big fan of it, loves Victor Oladipo, I'm really excited about that trade, and so much so that that night, Durant is a huge NBA 2K player, like, loves playing NBA 2K, and Kevin Durant fired up NBA 2K, made sure to trade Victor Oladipo on the Thunder and played a game with the Thunder with Victor Oladipo on, you know. So, and I kind of wish I'd put that in there. I thought of that after the fact, like, because it was always kind of something funny that I knew.
Yeah.
And, you know, then it was like, that would have been like, it didn't necessarily add anything, you know, but it was just kind of like, you know, fun little anecdote to have in there to, you know, fully describe how much he liked the Oladipo trade.
It sounds like something that, like, Dime Mag would aggregate.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know?
That's all you're writing that for. You just want things to be picked out and for somebody to make a headline out of it.
Yeah, you want somebody else to steal your pages, yeah. Basically. Which is, whatever, that was my job for a while, so...
Let me say this too, though. Like, about the, the Skip Bayless thing that I put out there. You know, I think a lot of people are like, they're all over me because they're like, oh, you're airing dirty laundry or you're snitching or something like that. And, you know, maybe I regret some of that stuff a little bit, but... You know, I think at the same time there's a context to this, and that's part of, like, reporting, is that you observe, you learn, you file things away, and you understand the right time to use it. Because that, if I use that sort of thing in a, you know, offhand way when it happened, I mean, I think people also need to understand that wasn't this season. That thing with Skip Bayless, that happened probably 3 years ago. So it was a lengthy amount of time in the past. But, like, that would have been just like a small, like, little anecdote, like, that nobody would have cared about. Like, it wouldn't have carried any kind of magnitude to describe something. And so, you know, you're just kind of trying to put things in your pocket as much as you can. And, you know, that's – if you're just throwing out every little anecdote you find out on Twitter, then you can't write a story like that. You know what I mean? So, like, you kind of have to just put it all away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people really realize sometimes when you're covering a beat for as long as you are how close you can get to certain people. And at the same time, how much of reporting is not actually reporting? Like, there are so many things that you know just from, like, talking to player X. Yeah, just talking to player X, and, like, you become friends with people, you know? You become – and not even if you're not friends, you develop professional relationships with other people, and you hold on to things. And part of the media – I think part of what's changed in the media and kind of the internet era of media, we're getting into, like – nerdy journalism talk right now, but whatever.
I love this.
Yeah, I'm a journalism nerd, so it's okay. I was tweeting about the difference.
All of Twitter is too, because everybody tried to lecture me on what journalism is.
Yeah.
Neither here nor there.
Fine, well, let's talk about it. We have no commercial breaks, so we can end whenever the hell we want to end. But now I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, part of what's changed in the internet era with journalism is that when media was first set up. Like, journalism 101 is the media is supposed to set the agenda for the public.
Right.
And so much of the internet, because so many media companies are still struggling to figure out how to make money in internet journalism and in digital journalism and in convergence journalism, so much of it is now what does the public want to see? Because that's basically the best way to make money. It's the best way to sustain. And you see lots of great journalism out there still, and you see lots of watchdog journalism and journalism that's setting the agenda for the public. But at the same time, a lot of that is subsidized by journalism that the public sets the agenda for. And I think that's a real change. And I think the public now is used to seeing journalism that they're setting the agenda for. They're seeing journalism written about things they want to see versus about things that are basically dictated by the situation, with the reporter dictating what's the most important thing at that sense. And sometimes when that happens in a long feature where there are just tons of things that come out, it can look almost snitchy, but that's the job.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like what Pablo said yesterday on our Trump podcast, where it's kind of like, you know, you're putting your hands in your own petri dish, you know, and I think that's exactly kind of how this is that people want to try to tell you what they think that journalism is or what they think it should be, and at the same time they might get mad at knowing some of these things or saying, you know, why would you put that in there? Why would you do that? But then while they're also saying, man, that was great. I'm so glad to know that now.
Right. Right. For sure. People care about knowing that kind of stuff. And I thought you were fair. I thought you were totally fair.
That's all I really tried to care about. I wanted to be fair to all the parties involved. And, you know, I know some people are going to, you know, naturally, they're going to say, oh, he slammed Kevin Durant on his way out of town. And I didn't feel that way at all. I thought I tried to be very careful not to portray him like in this negative light. I just wanted to just kind of tell the story of like, look, he was going to come back and now he didn't. So like what changed or what happened and where, you know, how did you go from A to B? And that's really all I was trying to do. And I think I felt an assurance in it, just knowing that like, look, I just leaned on like the facts and the evidence and the reporting. Like that's, you know, I didn't really editorialize. Maybe the last line of the piece was, you know, opinion. But like, for the most part, I didn't editorialize it at all. It's just a reported story. So
can I come at you with that? Now I'm going
hard.
I'm going hard question journalism right now. I think you editorialized in another spot too. I think you editorialized that the lockout was supposed to help small market teams.
Oh, but you can't deny that.
I don't think it was. I think that was the company line the NBA was feeding. I think the lockout was supposed to get back a percentage of the BRI for the owners, and that was it. I think the NBA is arguably better off for everybody in terms of total revenue. The NBA is better off when large market teams are doing well. The NBA is better off when the Lakers are good, when the Knicks are good. It is better off from a revenue perspective. I mean, look, the Warriors brought in so much revenue for the league last year that the cap ended up jumping a little bit higher than people thought it would for 2016, just because the Warriors were so good. I don't know if that happens if the Warriors are in another market. I think the NBA's number one prerogative in that 2011 lockout was get back money for the owners and the basketball-related income.
That's what it's always about. It's always about the money. But I guess the point is that, you know, the hypocrisy of the league in that situation, you know, they tried to claim it was player sharing and all that type of stuff and revenue sharing and aiding small markets. And so I guess, yeah, that's fair. But like the point of it being that what they claim to have helped a small market like Oklahoma City effectively destroyed it. So like, you know, that's what people need to understand about this. And when there is a, you know, 30 for 30 or whatever done about the Thunder, like it's almost a comedy of incredible interwoven errors that have worked against the Thunder to get them to this point where they had to trade James Harden, where they, you know, then they, you know, Windhorst laid this out the other day too, and this was pretty well known when it happened, but then, you know, the Rose Rule thing with Durant, so like that hurt them against the cap. The NBA effectively admitted they were wrong and then reimbursed the Thunder the money, but it was already too late because it counted against the Thunder's cap. So you can go down the line and then you have the influx of the TV money jumping the cap again, which has enabled a team like the Warriors to be able to add a player like Kevin Durant when they never should have been able to do that, especially based on the new collective bargaining agreement. So like down the line you go, like everything just kind of worked against the Thunder. But as you laid out very nicely today, Fred, about the new cap projections, the tide has turned a little bit. There's actually, the Thunder have kind of gotten a break here with the new projection.
Ah, Royce, you're reading the Norman transcript, I see.
Oh, with absolute incredible thoroughness, you know.
Yeah, you want to talk about that for a couple of minutes?
Sure.
Basically, the cap next year is going to be lower than people expected. I mean, the original projections were somewhere between $107 million to $110 million. Now the projections got to about $102 million. You can check out the article on Norman Transcript. Ooh, I'm plugging myself again. You can check.
I'm talking about Fred.
I knew you were going to get one of those jokes in. But yeah, you can check that out in the actual details and numbers. Basically, all in all, this means that Russell Westbrook signing an extension which originally he would have had to take in less money than if he became a free agent in 2017. Now, if he signs an extension, he's actually not really taking that much less money. And it could incentivize him, if he does in fact want to stay, it could incentivize him to lock himself up to an extension before the season starts, which would be obviously a ginormous deal. Royce, I'd actually love to get your opinion on this. Do you, gun to your head, is Russell Westbrook on the Thunder throughout the rest of the season?
Yes.
That was very quick.
I believe it. I don't know. I don't know what they'll do. I've had some conversations. I think it's really hard to get a feel and a gauge for it right now, because so much of it's just going to depend on what Russ himself tells them or the feeling that they get from him. But here's the thing. You know, I plan on writing about this at least some point when I can take 5 minutes to do it. But, like, to me, you just don't trade Russell Westbrook. I know a lot of people are going to say, you got to, you can't walk away with nothing again. But, you know, a player like Westbrook, now, stars in the league are, you know, difficult to get. That's how you build a team. But a superstar of Westbrook's caliber, there's only like 8 of those guys in the whole league, you know, where it's like that. It's an incredibly rare commodity to have a player of Westbrook's caliber. And the moment you trade Westbrook, you're just trying to get him back. You're trying to get that type of player back. And more than likely, you're getting that back through first-round picks, which is a gamble because you can't actually project how a player is going to turn out, or through other young players that now you're going to have to take, you know, the next 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons trying to develop to get to that level. So, you don't want to walk away with nothing. You know, you don't want to do that. But at the same time, I think that the Thunder – here's the thing that the pitch I would make to Westbrook is say, where are you going to go? Like, where else are you going to go? Unless you're going to play for the Spurs, or you know you're going to go join the Cavs, like, what team are you necessarily going to jump on that's going to improve your chances to beat the Warriors than where you're already at, where we think we could probably build and add to some of this already?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I understand your opinion. I mean, I think this is not a situation of Sam Presti's that I envy. I mean, if I were Sam Presti, I would be so worried about losing two guys in back-to-back off seasons. I agree with you. If there's any chance you can keep Russell Westbrook, well, not any chance, but if there's a decent chance you're going to keep Russell Westbrook, I think you keep Russell Westbrook. Like, you're not going to get Russell Westbrook back in a trade for Russell Westbrook. You know, you're going to get you're going to get pieces, and knowing the Thunder's history, you can probably farm at least one of them into a pretty good player, and he would probably bring back the biggest trade haul for a guy like. In this collective bargaining environment, he would bring back the largest trade haul for a guy. Like, since Melo or Darren Williams, at least, would be the biggest haul since that guy.
Have you looked into it? Like, what's the kind of trade that you'd go after if you're Presti for Westbrook?
I mean, you could hit up the Lakers and go, you know, if I know that there are a lot of teams around the league who are convinced that Russ is going to the Lakers in 2017.
Which makes no sense to me. That makes no sense.
I mean, it's because he's from LA. I mean, look,
why would Russell Westbrook at age 28, you know, an incredible competitor, go join unless the Lakers take a leap, you know, unless they take a leap and, like, you know, Brandon Ingram's the real deal and it's working out and they're starting to, you know, push forward as a playoff team. But, like, why would Russell Westbrook go to the Lakers and, you know, not be in a position to be better than he is right now? I mean, look, if he's going to do anything, go to the Clippers, right?
I think you're right. I think that makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, whether it's true or not doesn't really matter in the sense that it still affects his trade value. Like, if a team that the Thunder are trying to trade Russ to thinks that they're only getting Russ for 1 year because he's going to bolt for the Lakers anyway, that's going to hurt his trade value. And whether they're accurate or not in thinking that, like, that's still going to affect how much the Thunder could possibly get back for him in certain destinations.
This is the same thing, though, that people thought Durant was going to the Wizards just because he happened to have been born in that area. So, I think with Westbrook, yeah, he lives in Los Angeles in the offseason, and he's from that area, and he went to UCLA. But, you know, that doesn't – look at Kevin Durant, what he just did. He went to the Warriors because the team's going to be amazing now. So, I would strongly assume that that's going to be what Russell Westbrook's decision factors into – more than anything else, rather than just the zip code of the city.
I think that's fair. As for trades, I mean, I think you could have the Lakers about Ingram and Russell. I think, look, Presti called every single person in the league when he was shopping Harden.
Yeah.
Like, he called everybody. Like, he was probably calling D-League GMs and just seeing what he could do, just to do his due diligence, you know?
Just calling baseball teams.
Yeah, exactly. He was calling the
Blue. Can I get Mike Trout?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's basically that really did happen. Like it was he was calling everybody. So if he were gonna shop around Westbrook, I mean, it would be the same. It's the same dude making the trade. So you know, he's gonna call Minnesota and bring up Andrew Wiggins' name. You know, and Chris Dunn, and you know whomever else, Rubio. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine. I don't know if there's a player in the league that you could pry Karl Towns away from Minnesota for. But
I wouldn't give him up.
No, I mean, there's no way. Minnesota would never do that.
I think Minnesota would be an interesting team to call, though. I think that that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
But then again, is Westbrook going to sign long term?
Right. I mean, a lot of these things, you basically need a commitment. I mean, I don't know if you get a commitment from like Denver, but Denver's got good young pieces. You know, I don't know if you get a commitment from.
What about the Celtics? A lot of people throw out the Celtics here.
Right. The Celtics are the one. I mean, the difference with the Celtics, everyone talks about how the Celtics are going to be so good in the future, and they have tons of assets, but they haven't drafted particularly well, and none of their young players are that good. Like they're
right.
Their assets. I don't mean to say that Marcus Smart's not good, but when I talk good, I'm talking I'm changing the level to Russell Westbrook good. I'm not saying Marcus Smart's a good player. He's a very good defensive player, but he's not a shooter. He's not really an offensive player right now. He's been terribly inefficient his entire time in the league as a scorer. And he's not someone who you can just say, like, oh, we got Marcus Smart back for Russell Westbrook. This trade is a win, even though we lost Russell Westbrook.
So what if you did, like, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, and that Nets pick?
I think they would need more than that. I think too. Yeah, I think they – I mean, look
– the one that somebody threw out to me last night, and I was like, man, for Russell Westbrook? I'm like,
Yeah, I think you need more than that. Like, I think I would need back, like, Jay Crowder and or Isaiah Thomas in that deal too.
Yeah.
You know, I said to one exec, not a Boston exec, just a guy who works for another team, I asked him if you were – we were having this exact conversation, and I asked him if you were Boston, what you would give up for Westbrook. I know this guy – loves Russell Westbrook, so he might have been willing to give up a little bit more than what's average. And Boston notoriously lowballs teams on trades and then doesn't go through with them. That's basically what they've been doing as they've been accumulating all these assets. So I'm not saying this is the line, but I'm just saying there are smart people in the NBA who say that he said he would give up the Nets 2017 pick, which is, you know, has first overall pick potential. He would said he would give up Thomas, Bradley, Crowder, 2017 Nets, and a future Celtics first round pick.
Yeah, and to me that's what it would take. But here's the thing with these type of trades, Fred, is look at now what's left over from the Celtics. You know, so like you want to go out and you want to get Russell Westbrook and you want to try to get him as quick as possible because you want to get him on your team. You also have to kind of gut your team to get him, and that's the challenge I think teams face when they're kind of going through these type of trades. Is that, yeah, they'll have, you know, Horford and Westbrook together and, you know, whoever's kind of left over from that, and they'll still probably have cap space and they can do a couple different things. And they could probably fill out a team, you know, especially being in Boston, they could probably fill out a team pretty easily, but you've got to give away a whole lot to get a guy back like Westbrook.
And you're probably not going to have a full-on commitment if you do it. So, and that's really what the issue is. Before we go, Royce, I want to ask you Kevin Durant, as you've noted a couple of times, reads stuff in the media. He follows stuff in the media. He knows you personally. He knows you professionally. Do you think he read that piece?
I know he did. Yep.
What do you think he thought of it?
I don't think he was the biggest fan in the world of it, but I can't really worry too much about what he felt about it, mainly because I just know that I was fair. And, like, other people can judge it for however they want to judge it. But I know that I was as fair as I possibly could be with it. You know, maybe some of that stuff, maybe I betrayed some trust in some ways. But at the same time, my job as a reporter, you know, I hate to say it, but people kind of got to be skeptical. You know, like, you can't always just be a complete open book if you don't want to expect something to come back around. Because while, you know, I think that something people have to understand is that it's not like I hacked his email address, you know, or something. I didn't do anything slimy. I just was around the guy. I knew him. I knew the people that knew him. I knew people in the organization. I knew teammates. I knew ex-teammates. And so when you just know people and you're just around them and, you know, you're just kind of mentally filling a notebook all the time, then that's just where it comes from. And so, like, I don't think that, like, there's anything that you can necessarily, like, be like, how dare you? How dare you do that? And I'm sure that in some ways he felt that way. But especially because from his perspective, you know, Durant is he's a sensitive person about these sort of things. So I'm sure from his perspective, he read that as I was kicking him out the door and I was totally trashing him. Because that's probably just how he's going to read. He's going to read it in, from that type of perspective. And I can't help that fact. I just know what it, I know what I said and I know what I wanted to get across.
Anything you want to plug before we go? Twitter handle, articles coming out, any other coverage?
I want to plug the Locked On podcast. Also, I want to plug at Fred Katz. That's your Twitter handle, right?
Yes, it is.
I want to plug my wife's Twitter handle, at Carrie. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to plug my Instagram because Boston Celtics fans found that.
Oh yeah, that was messed up. We don't need to talk about that. That was we don't need to throw those people. We don't need to get those people any
pub. It's a small section of the fan base. I'm not condemning all Celtics fans. It's in the same way that some idiots burned Kevin Durant's jersey. That does not speak for the entire Thunder fan base. People in every single fan base are idiots, and that's just the fact of life.
People are stupid.
Yep. People are the worst.
Paraphrase Royce Young. People are stupid. that can be your new Twitter bio. Hey, what was it? What was your first AIM screen name?
Oh, geez. I was really into WWF, and I think it was The Rock Says.
everyone's first AIM screen name is embarrassing.
I think that might have been it. I can't completely remember. It was something wrestling related. I'm pretty sure.
I had the most embarrassing first AIM screen name from like fifth grade.
What is it?
It was JeterFan 0626-7496. And the reason why it was so many numbers is not because there were like 10 million other Jeter fans. It's because it was Derek Jeter's birthday followed by his rookie year.
Oh my gosh.
That's an embarrassing one, right?
Yeah, you're fifth grade though.
Yeah, I was in fifth grade,
I used to just create email addresses because I was so into the like locking them down. I was really into wrestling. Like I had like Walls of Jericho because that was like Chris Jericho's finishing move. I remember. I had like a couple of like Stone Cold something. I don't know what I was doing in my life.
Oh man, you were all over the place. Yeah, I mean, look, I had Jeter fan in fifth grade, but like it's not like it was only fifth grade. Like that carried into like ninth or tenth grade.
I loved it when we all came to the realization. When email started becoming like part of like your personal life that you had to like use and like, you know, go to places with, is that like you couldn't stand there and like you're at, you know, some like Best Buy and they're like, you got an email address here? And you're like, and you had to sit there and be like, yeah, it's Studman71. Like you had to be like, you know, it's you had to change that. It started becoming part of your professional life.
I know. I had to change it, I think probably right around when I had my first internship in like ninth or tenth grade. I had to change it. I was like, I can't be Jeter fan 0626749. Yeah, oh yeah, it was like ninth or tenth grade. That's what I'm saying. That was embarrassing. I was like 15 or 16 and my AIM was still. Then I switched to Freddie K 89. We switched it over. That was better.
That's not bad.
That was fine. That was fine. I was okay with that. That's just my name. But yeah. but Jeter fan was that was a bad one.
Jeter fan.
All the numbers are what make it worse.
Says. That was pretty good.
What was it?
The Rock Says.
No, The Rock Says is solid. That's fine enough. Jeter fan's more embarrassing than that. All right, Royce, we good?
I'm good.
All right. You follow your Royce underscore Young on Twitter?
No, I'm just Royce. No underscores, no anything.
Ah, just Royce Young. Yeah. All right, so follow Royce Young if you're a Thunder fan. You probably already do. Royce, you should pick up that The Rocks at The Rock Says if it's
I'm going to get on it right now.
Before we head out, remember, head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. If you have any questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter, as Royce just said, at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road to follow Durant coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.